The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson live on YouTube on a Monday morning week two review. How you doing, Sam?
Doing good, Steve. What about you?
Doing great, Sam.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. We got all that out of the way?
Yeah.
Let's talk some football.
It's a nicety's done.
Yeah.
We can move on.
Let's talk some football. Just so you guys know, programming note. Let's start with the programming note. Right now is your week two review, but we've heard the people.
Okay.
They have demanded more PFF NFL podcast.
All right.
Millions of them.
Millions of them.
Yeah. There's been so much demand. Phones ringing off the hook. We're going to do an extra podcast.
We don't even have Wednesday. A phone in the office.
Just don't worry.
Sorry.
People are requesting it. People want this.
Hmm.
All right. And if you don't want it, you're getting it anyway. So Wednesday, we're going to do an extra podcast. And then Thursday will be our preview. So we have a review. And then Wednesday is going to be more like what we pick some bigger topics.
Yeah.
Maybe answer a mailbag question or two, get into some detail, discuss PFF grading, discuss trends. I mean, it feels like, Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott, those teams. We can dive in a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
On Wednesdays.
It's a chance to get into stuff that we can't really cover properly when we're reviewing or previewing games. So more kind of general topics that we can hit midweek.
Yeah, so hit us up. We've already had many requests. Now, that's not a lie. Many requests on actually what people want to see. So there's a whole bunch of different ways we could slice things on Wednesday. So just be ready for that. Let's review week two, Sam. Do we go back to the Thursday night game? It's early in the season. I don't remember. How much do we actually cover the Thursday night game on the review podcast? We usually touch on it, right?
I don't remember either, but let's do it. You can remember that far back.
Yeah, this feels like weeks ago. Tampa Bay Bucks beat the Carolina Panthers 20-14. Jameis Winston had a bounce back game. Your prediction was that he was going to look like MVP Jameis.
It wasn't quite.
It wasn't quite, but statistically it wasn't there, but because his best throws were dropped.
Right.
He had a great throw in the end zone that was dropped. Great throw up the sideline. That fell incomplete. His best throws were dropped. I think by the end of the week, he's going to be our top three or four graded quarterback.
I don't think we can call it a win. You can call it,
push.
Yeah. It's not a loss, but it's not a win either, I don't think.
The big story coming out of this, though, Tampa Bay, of course, bounces back from a week one loss to go to 1-1. But the Carolina Panthers fall to 0-2, and everybody's asking what's wrong with Cam. And maybe I've been a little harsh on Cam through the years. So I did tweet at somebody. I said, no, this is the same Cam we've seen every year except 2015. That's harsh. It's not the same Cam. As a passer, it's the same maddening Cam, though, who can zip. He hasn't lost zip right now. I don't see the ball coming out of his hand poorly. I see the same inaccuracy that we've seen through the years. The difference in Cam is the rushing ability. He's always been able to bridge that gap and in short yardage be a special short yardage runner, a guy that just is so unique, and they just don't have that right now.
Right, and he definitely, I don't think, looks right at all. And the discussion is, does he have to change his style now in the latter part, I guess, of his career? Does he have to change his style to extend his career and play the same kind of length as everybody else? And if so, can he even do that? Because, what made him such a great or such a unique quarterback was this rushing ability up the middle and what that allowed you to do on offense. If you take all that away, can he still be a dynamic, effective MVP caliber quarterback overall? And I think that's a big question. Now, I know Mike Renner has brought up before the idea that the threat of the run is the important thing, not necessarily the run, right?
Right.
So if you start using him more like a Russell Wilson, more like quarterbacks that are just able to threaten that without actually doing it that much, he's still really valuable, right? You just need to take away the QB power right up the middle, you know, leading him into a linebacker, basically. But it does require that change.
So we've talked a lot about QBs staying healthy. Maybe this is the Wednesday topic. I'm just going to come up with a bunch of stuff.
They're all broken right now.
Maybe this is a Wednesday topic, perhaps. We came out with something. So the way things happen in the analytics community, if you think that something matters the most, you focus on that. And then you say something like everything else doesn't matter. Or you make this declarative statement. It's a little bit too black and white sometimes. But what we came up with recently was about QBs control their pressure rate. Right, so QBs might be the biggest factor in their pressure rate, but that doesn't mean that the O-line isn't a big factor as well. I mean, they have a significant effect as well. I'm going to make a statement about QB health, though.
Oh.
I think QBs own their injuries. QBs are to blame for their injuries, for the most part. Then you have a Drew Brees situation like yesterday that I think has nothing to do with him. But that's just like in pressure rate, if you say QB's the number one factor, and then O-line's number two. There are some times where the O-line is to blame. There's some times where the quarterback is to blame. I think overall, the fact that Cam has a foot or ankle injury, whatever he's dealing with, that came from a preseason game when he was dancing around a clean pocket and hurt himself. The fact that he gets hurt over and over again, Big Ben gets hurt over and over again, Carson Wentz took ridiculous hits on Sunday Night Football.
So that part,
a lot of that is the quarterback.
That part I'll give you. I mean, it's basically the same as the pressure rate, right? Because ultimately hits contact for a quarterback is essentially an extension of pressure. So it's the same dynamic at play there. Quarterbacks are largely to blame for their own pressure. On the other hand, you can still have an offensive line that's garbage and that will massively increase the amount of pressure and therefore hits you take. So they're not obviously solely responsible for it. But I would say I could get on board with the idea that they are more responsible for the hits that they take than anything else.
Right.
And so, to the point where sometimes other things can overtake that if they are exceptionally at either end of the scale. So either offensive lines being terrible / brilliant, offensive schemes being terrible / brilliant at getting the ball out of your hands / making you hold it. Otherwise, it's the quarterback.
So that's all I want to say. Okay. I think there's a lot of that at play where everybody's like, well, this poor guy is behind a bad offensive line. I don't think Cam's been sitting behind this disastrous offensive line the majority of his career.
So two things come out of this weekend for me. One, all the quarterbacks got broken. That's not great.
Usually we go game by game, but should we just hit
I just want to just a couple of things that came out of it first, and we can go game by game.
Oh, sorry.
Two, that this was like the reason you don't overreact week. You know, week one is overreaction to week one, and then week two is everything swinging back to where you kind of thought it was anyway.
Right. Well, yeah, we talked about that before where I tweeted, you know, sometimes week two looks different than week one.
Right. This is the perfect example. Yeah. Almost everything swung back to exactly the way you thought it would have been heading into week one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things like teams that play a road game in week one then get to go home.
Yeah.
And things change, or vice versa. I mean, you do have stuff like the Bills being 2-0. After two road games. And the Chiefs being 2-0 after two road
49ers.
Games. The 49ers.
They didn't even go home.
Yeah.
In between. They went to like Youngstown or something.
I saw that. Oh, that's okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Why didn't Bobby come visit?
Yeah, maybe he doesn't like you.
I mean, not just me. I mean, must like somebody else at the office.
Does he? I mean, he left.
Yeah. A lot of lateral moves leaving PFF to go to the NFL.
Of course, he is 2-0 now.
Yeah, so is Zach.
Right, yeah.
How about that?
Huh. Yeah.
We were just talking about them ruining the quarterbacks.
Right, and suddenly they're 2-0, both of them.
Yeah, they're 2-0. I think, who is that? New Orleans is doing the same thing, because they're going right to Seattle for next week's game.
Okay.
And Drew Brees stayed back to discuss the to discuss his hand.
Discuss his hand?
Or to see a hand specialist.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, presumably they're doing things with it rather than just talking about it.
Yeah, the right. Early reports are not good.
Pick a game. Let's go.
Let's just go with that one. The Saints at Rams.
Okay.
And the Drew Brees injury.
So, Drew Brees wrecked his hand. Yes. Teddy Bridgewater came in. Teddy, it turns out, sucks now. So the Rams won.
He didn't look good. No. So I just ground that film.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Ground the film.
Yeah. I think if we're talking about a difference in the offense, Breeze overall throws the ball on the shorter end compared to other NFL quarterbacks, but he obviously knows when to take shots.
Yes.
And when he throws the ball short, he puts it on his receivers.
Teddy at this point, Teddy at this point is Alex Smith. Like he is.
I don't think he's as good. Let's not underrate Alex Smith.
But he's been thrown into the bucket of pathologically conservative. Like there were questions for a while about, was this Teddy? Was this a product of influences within the offense that were essentially forcing him into permanent checkdown mode? And I think now we're reaching the answer that no, that's just him. He doesn't throw deep enough.
Yeah, he left
the shot.
He left a few opportunities on the table. And like Alex Smith, he'll also hold the. If you're going to be that quick pass guy, you can't pick random spots to just hold the ball and take sacks.
Yeah,
that's Bridgewater as well. You know, taking a few too many sacks, taking a few too many hits, or, you know, so.
You've also, if you're going to do that, you really do have to be stupidly accurate.
You do.
You know?
You like, do. And he missed Kamara in the flat. When they did try to go deep, he's overthrown him. So, I mean, it was just off.
The big problem with that style of offense was always that you are asking yourself, you are forcing yourself to essentially be perfect the whole time. Because the second you miss one of those, you're now way behind the eight ball and you're not set up to take that back. You're set up to make sort of 7-8 yard gains constantly. When you suddenly find yourself in 2nd and 10 or perish the thought, 2nd and 15 because it was a penalty, you know, now
as there always is every time you try to run the ball in today's NFL.
Right. Now you can't, you're just not set up to get 15 yards on, at a time. So you're in trouble.
So I don't think it's hopeless going forward. I think with Sean Payton calling plays, you still have some playmakers to work with. And I think you're going to see more. Taysom Hill.
Yeah. So, one, this was interesting because this is a perfect example of how sometimes stuff just happens. It's not always the quarterback. Like Aaron Donald is coming up the middle, Drew Brees getting a pass away with a guy in his face, just happens to like connect hand on hand. And even then,
we see that all the time, though. We see hand.
And even then, it's like the freaky angle, right?
Right.
Sometimes a body part is just in the wrong position for contact.
He was pronated. Right into Aaron Donald's hand.
Wow, you've got like complex words and stuff.
Well, yeah, you pronate on every throw.
Huh,
pronation.
Okay.
That's turning, turning out of the...
Thumb was turned in, cracks Aaron Donald's hand, suddenly can't hold a ball. And it was legitimately like couldn't pick up the ball. Like went to grab one from the sideline and it just didn't stick in his hand.
Right. And so the doctors, the football doctors around Twitter were guessing UCL strain? Sprain, whatever it is.
It's a thumb ligament. There's only so many things in your thumb.
But like, they think it's surgery, that surgery is needed.
Okay.
And it's not one of those, like, it's one of those you just do a test, and if you fail the test, you know it's an issue.
Yeah.
So he didn't have to go back and get x-rays or anything like
right.
that. That's what people
and everyone, like,
are assuming.
The whole thing on the sideline, it's, oh, he's got his helmet. Is he ready to come back in? No, he's just trying to hear the call. Like, he's got a speaker in his ear.
Well, they were saying that?
Yeah. Oh. Also, by the way, this game featured maybe my favorite commentary blunder of the weekend. Joe Buck, quite unironically, suggested that, sure, losing Drew Brees during the game is not ideal, right? But the real hurt to the Saints offense is that now Taysom Hill has to be ready to go back in as the backup quarterback now. So you lose what he brings to the offense as the dynamic X-factor weapon. That's the real body blow to this New Orleans offense. Which was crazy, one, because just on the face of it, that's absurd. Two, Troy agreed with him immediately.
Yeah,
was like, yeah, you're right. That's the body blow, not the fact that your Hall of Fame quarterback is now sitting on the bench with a wrecked thumb. And three, because I think the very next play, Taysom Hill lined up as a tight end, caught a pass over the middle. So it wasn't even true.
there was a lot going on there.
Yeah, that was fun.
So it's kind of funny because... When you have Drew Brees, I wouldn't do that, the whole Taysom Hill thing. When I have Teddy Bridgewater, I'd probably mix him in a little bit more.
So I don't want to rag on Troy and Joe, particularly because this one came from Sean Payton. So they're just at this point they're just repeating somebody else's ludicrous statements, not making their own.
I know which one this is.
But Sean Payton suggested that Taysom Hill, it's a lot like Steve Young.
Steve Young.
Because the one thing you remember from Steve Young during his time when Joe Montana was starting was how much he played tight end and went over the middle.
People forget just how good Steve Young was as a passer.
People also lose their goddamn minds talking about Taysom Hill. Like, he's a fun athlete and does a lot of things to a, you know, an okay degree. But is he actually good at anything? Except maybe special teams?
So Taysom Hill is a lot like just the Wildcat in general. I used to always hate on the Wildcat.
He's basically an anthropomorphization of the Wildcat.
What?
Yeah, well, I think that's a word. I think I got it right.
Well, the Wildcat is just like a creative way to average 4 yards per carry.
Right.
That's what the Wildcat is. So Taysom Hill, over the last 2 years, has averaged 4.4 yards per reception per catch and 5 yards per carry. 5 yards per carry is pretty good. But creative ways to essentially average under 5 yards per play when you have Drew Brees on the field. So that's the issue. And he's got a couple touchdowns here and there, and he made one good throw one time.
That's actually an outstanding description. Taysom Hill is the Wildcat in human form.
Yeah.
He is the human Wildcat.
So then people say, well, then you've got the defense has to prepare for it. The offense has to prepare for it, too. You have to spend practice time on Taysom Hill. So while he's fun, man, we take the fun out of everything at PFF. By bringing logic to the table, take the fun out of everything.
I tweeted this last week. I love seeing it, and I don't care that it's silly, right? But let's try and dial back how we describe it. He is not in any way, shape, or form like Steve Young, except for the fact that he's kind of athletic and can move around. That's it, right?
Yeah,
it is not in any way, shape, or form a blow to the offense if they could no longer use the Taysom Hill trick package, even if they couldn't, and they could because they did.
Though I think we're going to see even more and more of it now.
Well, what I was going to ask is how long of Teddy playing at that level before you just throw in Taysom Hill as the quarterback?
Now, all that said, Taysom tore it up that one preseason game.
Right.
This year. Absolutely tore it up. He was hitting throws. He was tough to defend. He's going to pick up.
The gimmick package makes much sense whatsoever, right? But if Teddy continues to suck, like at what point do you go, you know what, just playing Taysom Hill at quarterback causes defenses more problems than check down Teddy?
I think they're going to see, honestly, I think it might take one game. I think they're going to see how well they get through a game with more of a, they're either going to tell Teddy this week, look, you got to take some more shots,
right?
Or we're going to take advantage of you in Uber game manager role. If you're an Uber game manager role, you've got one of the best possession receivers in the NFL in Michael Thomas. You have Alvin Kamara. We're going to create some mismatches. We'll have the Taysom Hill package for 15 or 20 plays, and we're going to try to piece together offense that way. If they score 10 at Seattle, then I think it's going to be Taysom Hill. If they're just like, look, this isn't going to work. We need to hit a seam every now and again. We got to do something.
Yeah.
Right? I think they give it a week. But you need a week to, you know, prep Teddy.
I think that's fair.
Say he's the starter.
Right. I'm not saying you do it now, but at some point, this Teddy Bridgewater thing is looking like a pretty ugly trend now. Like, even when he got thrown in the garbage, like all the data points have been saying the same thing for a while, but there's always been mitigating circumstances or something else at play. Like, well, yeah, he looked bad, but it was the second string offensive line and he was under, you know what I mean? Whereas now it's like, look, at some point you just have to say all of the numbers say this.
Yeah.
This is not a freak, you know, arrangement of data points. This is just what it is.
It wasn't great. The O-line was worse this week than it was last week, but not disastrous. On the other side, we done with Teddy?
Yeah.
And the Saints?
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Saints, there's just a lot of pressure on their defense now. It's a tough situation. They still have a good roster.
They also got boned by the officials again.
Yeah,
Took a defensive touchdown off the board.
That is crazy. 3 weeks in a row?
Yeah.
Three games in a row.
Against the Rams twice.
What's going to happen next week?
I mean, I don't
know. Let's see. It's against Seattle. Probably some sort of contested possession that goes the wrong way.
Cameron Jordan scoops runs like, what was it, 80 yards or something for a touchdown. Was really upset that he had to run 80 yards for nothing.
I don't
justifiably so. What I was wondering is, because they got the ball, right? If you're the officials and it's like, oh, man, we actually really blew that one. And like even when you go to Sean Payton and he's like, what the bleep? And their explanation is just like, yeah, our bad. We just blew it dead. Sorry, right? It's not even, you know, like sometimes when they're at least arguing something different, you're like, all right, fine. I just have to, you saw it different.
Sean, sorry, we missed the pass interference. Sean, sorry, we stole 20 seconds off the play clock with 30 seconds left.
They're just like, no, you're right. Our bad. We screwed up. You should have 7 more points, right? If you're the officials, what I was wondering is the Saints have the ball now. So they should have just like manufactured you know, five fake penalties to keep that drive alive until they scored. You know,
oh, like, yeah, that would really keep the league on the up and up.
You ever play mutant league football where you can like bribe the refs and no matter what you do, the official keeps the drive going until the opposition realizes what's going on and murders the ref.
That's the difference between you and I. You were playing Mutant League. I was trying to make Madden the most realistic game possible.
I'm not saying that the Rams would have had to resort to murdering the officials, but what I am saying is the officials, you know, they could have found a dodgy play here and there, like, oh, look, there's defensive holding.
I hope you're
have another
in charge.
First down, Saints.
I hope you're never in charge.
Would that not have that would that that's equity. They took 7 points off the board. They are going to do everything in their power to put them back on again. Just for that drive.
Five wrongs don't make a right.
They do. I think they do.
Nothing better than that spotting of the ball on Thursday night.
But can you imagine? Yeah, that was amazing. Can you imagine how much everybody would be losing their minds if they're just like, oh, there's 3rd and 10. Teddy like drops it into the ground again. Oh, there's a defensive holding call.
There's a lot of. It's only 5 yards at a time because Teddy's not going to complete a pass more than five. He'd have 17 defensive holding penalties.
A lot of flags.
All right, you guys are at the 5 now. Are we good? We even?
Yeah, like 6 penalties in. They'd be like, look, come on. Tell you what, Teddy. Look, you throw it deep. Put it in the end zone. We'll find defensive pass interference for it. Just take it. We've got to do this more than 5 yards at a time, Teddy. You got to help us out here. I think that would have been incredible.
Chuck one.
I'm not at all unfair. That's the beauty of it.
How about the Rams?
How about the Rams?
On their side.
Yeah.
The O-line, not great.
No, again. The O-line doesn't look great this year.
No, they don't. As protected as they get with that play-action scheme, when they do have to spread it out and throw the ball, they're giving up some pressure. The Saints did a really nice job. We've been harsh on Marcus Davenport before. I thought he did a nice job rushing the passer. He had a bunch of pressures. We have him with 6 or 7 at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, I really liked their third down package with him at nose tackle. He was doing some nice jobs there. Trey Hendrickson coming off the edge. So the Saints got after Goff, and he made some dropped a dime in to Brandon Cooks early on, but then made some questionable decisions, including that fumble. He held that ball forever on that fumble, and I don't even know where he was throwing it, to be honest. So there is, you know, Goff looks a tick off, and he's had that maddening up and down as well, you know, missing some throws, and then he'll come back and hit what's there and everything. So I think they, you know, the Rams, they're sitting there at 2-0, but they need Goff to be a lot more consistent than he's been in that O-line to shape up. Because, you know, you've got Joseph Noteboom, Brian Allen. Those are the new guys. And then Austin Blythe, who got hurt, only played 27 snaps. You know, it was his second year. Some questions with him.
Yeah, the O-line is an issue. It's interesting that this offense doesn't look like it's going to catch fire the way it did last year in terms of just relentlessly throwing up points on everybody, but it doesn't look like teams have figured out how to stop it. So I think we've landed somewhere in the middle of what we were talking about coming into the season, which was, has this system evolved or will people figure out how to stop it and force them to plan B? And I think we've kind of wound up somewhere in the middle of that, which is teams have a better handle on what they're doing, but they haven't figured out how to stop it entirely yet.
I think that says a lot about the Rams. It's the Chiefs are similar. Like, the Chiefs had one quarter where they scored yesterday.
This was amazing.
They scored 28.
Let's pivot to this game now.
Well, I just want to finish with the Rams.
Okay.
They scored 27 in a game that felt like an offensive struggle.
Right.
Like, they still figured out a way.
And that was the same last week. Like, last week they put up 30 in the Panthers in a game that felt like they were really making hard work.
And that shows how good of an offense they have. All right.
The Chiefs thing. This is maybe the most amazing statistic of the week, that the Raiders held the Chiefs scoreless for 3 quarters and lost by 18.
Yeah.
What? That's amazing. Like, they held the Chiefs scoreless for 3 quarters, which, when was the last time that's happened? Pre-Mahomes, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's insane.
But they had a 28-point second quarter where Mahomes threw for 270 yards.
Yes.
Now, he had a negated 72-yarder.
Uh-huh.
So he threw for 443, and I think with negated plays, which, you know, doesn't always tell the full story, but with negated plays, he threw for like 540.
Yes.
Including that 72-yarder that was negated.
That was,
and for the second straight week, Mahomes missed. He still missed a bunch of throws.
Yeah.
And had a bad fumble that, you know, we have to put on him. So he doesn't have, I don't think he has an interception, but he's got 2 bad fumbles in 2 weeks. But it really is like watching Madden, because he's throwing the ball down the field 20% of the time. And there's a lot of open throws down the field, and he's just chucking it. He's just chucking it deep, and they're making plays, even without Tyreek Hill.
It reminds me still so much of that 98 Vikings, where it's like, it's exactly the same thing, in that, yeah, sure, you can keep them quiet for three quarters, and then, bam, they just explode for a ton of points and didn't matter. That's what they're doing. It's like, it's absurd how easy they make some of this stuff look. Now, the Raiders were a massive architect of their own demise, in terms of, it didn't seem like they understood that teams could attack deep down the field a lot of the time. Like, all those, there was so many wide open people.
There was a coverage bust, but it's also guys like just getting beat by a step, and Mahomes is putting it on them. It was a mix of both.
Yeah, but there's like, you've got stuff where there's a safety one on one against a guy running a corner post route. That's just, I mean, that's 10 yards, 5 yards wide open. But it's a disaster.
It's a combination of so many different things, though. The Chiefs, I mean, Romo did a nice job showing it. They've got trips to one side, and then they're going to throw a back in motion to essentially put four receivers to the same side. Secondary can't communicate, wide open guy up the seam. So you've got – it's kind of like the Rams here, right? You've got this combination of, there are guys who know how to get open. You have Travis Kelce, and you have guys who are pretty good at receiving. Then you have the scheme creating open throws, and then you have Patrick Mahomes hitting big-time throws. And if you're a Chiefs diehard and you're just lamenting that you could have scored 70, every single week there are games where it's like, wow, you could have scored 70. Like Mahomes will miss two or three open throws, but then he'll squeeze in a couple other ones to kind of make up for it. And at the end of the day, you're like, man, if everything went our way, we scored 55.
Yeah. I mean, this is so far the start of the season has been fantastic for the Chiefs, because one, yes, Patrick Mahomes might regress statistically a little bit, but it's marginal, if it happens at all.
Yeah.
He still looks absolutely phenomenal. Last year was not a fluke. But the best thing is, he's in one of the best, if not the best, systems in the NFL. Like, this scheme is as good as anything else out there at putting people in open positions, getting people open, scheming guys into favorable situations, simply putting defenses into tough spots, into awkward matchups, and stressing their rules and coverages and their communication, all that kind of stuff. And Tyreek Hill isn't playing yet.
Yeah, he's not even here yet.
Right. Like, this is terrifying for any other team. Again, the only thing that matters for this team is whether the defense gets better and can hold up its end of the bargain like last year.
By the way, Mahomes, 10 for 15 for 389 on deep passes this year. 20-plus yard passes. 10 for 15 for 389 in 5 touchdowns.
Yeah. Now, it did well against the Raiders. The Raiders look pretty terrible.
But the Raiders, this is what's maddening. I used that word 3 times so far today. Not maddening. This is what's maybe frustrating. If you're an Oakland Raiders fan watching the Chiefs, you're like, man, our defense is flying around here in the first quarter. They're making plays. They look great. And then Mahomes just starts chucking pinpoint deep passes the whole second quarter.
Yeah.
And then you're done.
Yeah.
But the Raiders, like, overall, played pretty well defensively. They did a nice job.
Yeah, but
I guess.
So the Chiefs defense is the thing that needs to step up.
Yes.
Like last year, because it's going to be it's basically going to determine whether they have a shot at a Super Bowl or not. Again, like last year. It doesn't need to be good. It just needs to not be as bad as the offense is good.
Right.
Worryingly, it still seems to be basically Chris Jones and not that much else.
It's maddening.
It is, yeah. Like, why has Frank Clark not been able to win against what is not a good slate of players he's played so far?
Because Frank Clark was an overrated player.
He was, but he was still a good player. Like, he hasn't even played good against bad.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
He was a very overrated pass rusher. Chris Jones had 58% of their pressures yesterday.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. Particularly, again, for an interior player. Like, edge rushers are supposed to be the guys getting the pressure. Frank Clark didn't get anything. And Chris Jones was the guy doing everything himself again. That needs to change. Like, they're not going to be able to win on defense with just Chris Jones, almost regardless of how well he plays.
Yeah, I think when and if the Chiefs start, when and if they lose some games, it's the secondary is going to get picked on. Jarvarius Ward and Rashad Breeland, they get picked on at some point. And the pass rush is too dependent on Chris Jones. If Frank Clark's not going to step up, don't forget they lost Dee Ford and Justin Houston,
right?
Who, even though everybody seems to think that Frank Clark's a better player than them, for him to play at the same level that they did last year, he'd have to have a career year.
Yes. Frank Clark, I think, is a better player overall than Dee Ford.
Better overall player.
Though he hasn't had a season like Dee Ford's last year.
Yep.
There's no way Frank Clark has ever been a better player than Justin Houston, a healthy Justin Houston.
Right.
Like Frank Clark's, the only way Frank Clark is better than Justin Houston is in terms of durability, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's only because he hasn't been broken yet. Like Justin Houston was a vastly superior player who got hurt a lot and they eventually had to move on. But, you know, Frank Clark, either way, he should be and needs to be better than he's been so far.
Weird game on the other side for Derek Carr. Two interceptions that were like, you know, you chalk him up to miscommunications, not being on the same page. You've got to trust your receiver. One where the receiver just gets owned on a fade.
He's really got to do a better job there.
Yeah.
The receiver.
The receiver does.
Right.
Like, but then then there's a slant for an interception where Derek Carr
threw it to the pick guy.
Well, he's trusting the the slant is going, has to go through a linebacker, and he's throwing it before he even gets to the line. I mean, the timing of it was
off. That route combination is set up to free the other guy.
The other guy, right.
So,
right.
I mean, charitably, that's a misread. That's just terrible otherwise. But the fade thing, one, I don't know why people are still throwing end zone fades. They're such a terrible, terrible route to ever throw.
I'd give maybe one shot.
To who? I would only do it if I had a guy that I was confident in being able to moss the opposing cornerback. Yeah. And even then, I don't think it's a good percentage play. I'd only be taking it if somebody was specifically taking away the slant.
About 30% of fades are caught, by the way.
Like, if you've got a guy, if you've got a cornerback and he's lined up like a yard and a half inside leverage and saying, under no circumstances are you coming inside in this ISO route, then I might throw a fade or a back shoulder or something, right? Otherwise, don't do it. It's a bad play. It's never going to work.
Well, the alternative is you get in tight and you run play action, and we see wide open throws schemed up all the time. I would try to scheme something.
So it's a terrible thing to be doing in the first place. But if you're going to do it, you need at the very minimum, the receiver needs to work on the basis that you're not catching this ball. I might not catch it either, but the corner is definitely not catching it.
Right.
Like, if I have to tackle this guy in midair and give away a penalty, that's fine. But you're not picking it off. Tyrell Williams just gets owned at the line of scrimmage and just stops, just watches it. Corner just backpedals, catches it. Like, that's absurd.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Like, receiver should, under no circumstances, allow that to happen.
But yeah, I'd be more concerned. You know, again, week two kind of solves things. After week one, we're like, hey, do the Raiders actually have some playmakers? Derek Carr, is he going to stay hot? I mean, they scored 10 points against the Chiefs at home, against the defense that we're saying could hold the Chiefs back this year.
Darren Waller still looks okay, though.
Yeah, Darren Waller did have a nice game. So
Jacobs made some plays as well, but obviously, because he's a running back, it didn't matter.
No. Mattered for my fantasy team, though.
No. Well, that's something.
Yeah. It's a big key player, my dynasty league.
Okay.
That's dynasty, if you guys are American. So the Chiefs are still awesome. Let's discuss Vikings-Packers.
Oh, God.
This was horrendous by the Vikings offense.
Yeah.
I thought our numbers were wrong, but this isn't to absolve Kirk Cousins, but just for perspective, he's been under pressure 60% of his dropbacks. That's like almost twice as high as the league average.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like the interior of this offensive line became a problem when they went up against a better defensive front. Almost.
You've got them nailed. Garrett Bradbury's not off to a good start in his career.
What's interesting is that they brought in Dakota Dozier because Elflein went down hurt. And he was definitely better than Elflein. It was still really bad.
Yeah.
That's how bad their offensive line is right now.
You know who's awesome, though? I nailed this one.
Who?
Dalvin Cook.
He really is.
I told you, he's awesome, man.
Of course, being a running back, it didn't matter.
No, it certainly doesn't matter. But,
It was funny because, Green Bay scored in their first drive, or certainly scored first.
First two.
And it was like, all right, the game is already ruined for Mike Zimmer. You can no longer just run the ball 58 times and get out of there.
They still snuck Dalvin 20 carries. He had the 75-yard touchdown.
Right. They still, I mean, between Dalvin and, you know, Madison got a few as well, they still were not prepared to abandon the run at any point in this game. And it almost worked. Like, they actually got back to the point where I don't think you can say they should have won the game, but they probably should have taken the lead had Kirk Cousins not thrown a hideous interception into the end zone.
The turnover-worthy plays that Cousins threw or had, multiple fumbles, so a fumble on a scramble, a fumble on a sack, both just terrible ball security.
The interception into the back of the end zone.
So he had the interception into the back of the end zone. He had the interception over the middle of the field where he tried to throw the ball through four Packers.
Yeah.
So the thing about Cousins, and then, you know, I'm watching people like to say, well, he checks down too much and he does this and that. There are plays like that. I mean, he had this one that was perfectly designed, deep crosser. I think it was Diggs. He had isolated on the free safety, had him wide open. And this is why we like to say sometimes the defense is dependent on the offense. As great as the Packers defense has played through 2 weeks, I mean, if Cousins just hits this deep crosser, you know, that changes things. And you just, and it's like a couple plays that change things. And he checked it down.
Yeah.
So
missed Diggs. This is like, this is the game in a nutshell that's basically Cousins. Like, this game was Kirk Cousins.
You've summed him up, right? I mean, it's
Cousin.
Like, there's not, overall, it's like good decision, good decision, good decision. And then might, if in a bad day, there's six or seven.
Yeah.
But in a normal day, there's a couple where it's like, what do you think? How could you be so good at these other, on these other plays and then just not see the field or not, or just randomly decide to be aggressive when you shouldn't be, randomly decide to be conservative when you shouldn't be.
Right.
That was the him yesterday.
It's so, it's maddening, Steve.
That's four.
And even in this game, there were some nice plays in there. And, you know, they're getting back into contention. And then...
Well, even... So the 45-yard touchdown?
Yeah.
We were sitting there watching it, right? I don't even know if that was a good throw. That Jair Alexander, this was, you know, my favorite play in football where the corner...
Right. Inches from
replaces.
Breaking that
he
up.
Got his hand on it. He actually... Cousins hung it up there enough that the corner... I wish we could draw on Parker here. You know,
probably could, but we don't be drawing on our own logo.
We can't. So you got cover three. So if there's a free safety here in the middle of the field,
yeah,
and the cover three corners over here, this was Jair. The free safety jumped a route,
replaces him,
and Jair had to replace the free safety.
Yeah,
and Cousins hung it up there enough that Jair on the other side of the field actually got his fingertip on the ball, and then it ended up getting caught by Diggs, which, you know, should have been a touchdown.
Yeah,
or an easier touchdown. So even that play, their biggest play. Was a little lucky.
This is, we're back to this idea of this is the game that Kirk Cousins is here for, right?
I don't, yeah.
He's not there to be great all the time. He's there because he's capable of bringing them back from a big deficit against a good team on the road, the way this game was. They ended up doing it. They got in a position where they needed the quarterback to make those plays. And instead he tosses the ball to a Packers defender in the back of the end zone or fumbles it away. And
he tried to throw another pick, too, on a corner route that was forced. I mean, he was just completely off.
And the way we talked about Teddy before, where at some point the data is the data, like this, at some point Kirk Cousins can't win these games because he just keeps doing stupid things. It's like I'm fine with this idea of he will probably always be slightly too harshly looked at because he's being judged against that monster contract, right?
Yeah.
But at some point you need to win one of these games, one of them, any of them. Right, because you're clearly capable of doing this. You just don't do it when it matters the most. He's like anti-clutch. He's like the reverse Tom Brady. Like when the thing matters most, Kirk Cousins is almost certain to do something stupid and cost his team the game.
He'll offset this later in the year.
Right.
Against a bad team. Yeah, he's going to throw for 440.
Yeah.
He'll go 30 for 38 for 440 and four picks. Right. At the end of the year, he'll have a 98 pass rate.
Turn a 15-point win into like a 28-point win. The other thing to come out of this game is, so far, all the ability to review pass interference has done is to find offensive pass interference on easy touchdowns.
Yeah.
It's done it a couple of times
now. Pick plays or rubs.
It is manufacturing offensive pass interference on otherwise clean, you know, pick play, rub play, the kind of stuff that happens every single game constantly. So it took a touchdown off the
Maybe
board here.
Maybe that's a
here.
Whole Wednesday topic to about Diggs. The pass interference rule that I hate talking about rules.
I know you do.
I hate it.
But
sorry,
it took a touchdown off the board to Diggs earlier in this game.
Right.
Because Dalvin Cook ran into a couple of defenders during his. But this is like.
How hard is it to disguise that you're trying to pick somebody? Just like run
the thing
route.
Is, it's back to this. This is what the NFL hates, right? This is the irony with all their messing up of rules is the NFL absolutely hates putting. Judgment calls in the hands of officials,
yeah.
Right? Because at some point, he's going to make the wrong judgment, and then the whole system looks like a sham. So in order to try and stop that happening, they create the most idiotic black and white scenarios that are way worse than just allowing judgment allowing judgment to run its natural course and accepting that somewhere along the line someone's going to make a bad judgment call.
Right.
So they create these absurd black and white situations that are patently far worse than that to avoid that. But the thing about those plays, picks, rubs, that kind of stuff, is it's inherently a judgment call because in theory you are allowed to run your route wherever you want, and if it gets in the way of a defender, unlucky. But you're not allowed to go and block that guy.
Right.
So at some point, somebody's got to make the judgment of, was he trying to run a route that happened to pass through the body of a defender?
Right.
Or was he trying to block the defender?
There were two offensive pass interference in the Patriots games. One was reviewed. It was Josh Gordon. That one looked like, I mean, he was running a slant into a defender.
Mm-hmm.
So that looked more reasonable, like you're running a route. And then there was, I can't remember if it was Izzo, it was one of the tight ends. I mean, he went straight at a guy and like threw a forearm shiver at him. It's like, okay, and that wasn't reviewed, but it's like, okay, that's a clear offensive pass.
But a huge amount of this is just acting from the offense, absolutely. Right? Like, and the thing is, when you run a route, like if you're going to run into a guy, it's instinct to put your hands up and like shove him out of your way.
Sometimes you get that real extreme, like I'm going to run into you. And
sure,
just, hey,
but like
get the ball.
But if you're running into a guy, it is not instinctive to essentially run face first into him and then flop to the floor.
Right.
That is actually the ironic thing about it is the thing that will sell the fact that you're running a route involves doing the thing that comes unnaturally to you. So you will sell it if you run face first into a guy and then like flail to the ground. You know,
I couldn't do anything.
Then the guy
will
go, "Oh, that's fine. He was running his route. That's natural, right?"
Yeah.
If you did what actually comes natural to you, you would run into a guy. You would realize just before you're about to hit him that you're about to run into a guy. And you throw your hands up to get him out of your way and make sure you don't run face first into him. And then they go, oh, look, he's blocking him. Penalty. Like, that's the natural thing to do. It's actually ironically creating a situation where in order to sell that it was natural, you need to do something dramatically unnatural.
Yeah, it's awkward. It's just an awkward.
So particularly if you're a running back, right? Like Dalvin Cook was the guy getting pinged. He's running like a slant in tight to the formation. He, more than any receiver, is going to be more naturally inclined to like throw his hands up and shove somebody out of his way because that's kind of his gig.
Right.
Running. Yeah, it's just silly.
Like, it puts a lot more pressure on the coaches reviewing things. Like Dan Quinn challenged one early in the first quarter. It would have been like a 6-yard penalty on their own 15-yard line, and it was a bang-bang play on Julio Jones. Now, he was right.
Yeah.
Like, probably should have been overturned, but it's also one of those where it's like, man, like, the payoff's just not worth it here if I'm going to lose a whole challenge.
Right. And this is clearly not what the rule was supposed to do. The rule was supposed to achieve this idea of that was a horrendous blown call. Fix it.
Well,
the rule was not supposed to be, nobody here is looking for that play, but I've found a pick.
Well, maybe
so
don't
the touchdown
react.
Comes off the board.
I don't know. Maybe don't react to one play. Either way, they need to fix this whole...
This wasn't just one play. There was a couple. Just yesterday.
I mean, the Saints. This is reaction to the Saints play.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't even have a problem. Like, I think that's fine, right? If that's all you're there to achieve, let's just fix the horrendous miscalls.
I always say go to Twitter. Look, if Twitter is that upset, if they thought... Twitter thought Dez caught the ball. Twitter knew who had the contested possession between the Seahawks and Packers. Twitter knew it was pass interference. Like, they just get headquarters at the NFL is just surfing Twitter, and they're checking their timeline, and they're like, man, people are upset.
That's a judgment call as well, though, because you can get Twitter to say pretty much anything if you're in the wrong.
Well, you don't tell people that's what you're doing.
No, 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 but if you're in
the
wrong.
You have to create some fuzzy rule, like, we're just going to, you know.
The catch rule, I always liked the idea of sticking an old granny in the booth. You just ask the granny, did he catch that? And she goes, well, of course he did. Yep, catch. It was simple. You just ask some old person that knows nothing about the rules. Did he catch the ball? Yes or no? She says yes. It's a catch.
It's like a focus group.
Right. She says no. It's not a catch. It's simple.
Granny's experienced. You know, she's seen a lot in her day.
This is the thing, right? With the beauty of it is if you don't tell them what the rules are, you just ask, did he catch it? It's simple because everyone knows what a catch is until you start applying absurd black and white NFL rules to it.
You have a lot of stupid ideas, but I like this one.
Thank you. Where are we going now?
Packers defense real quick.
Oh, okay.
Let's give them credit. You know what Mike Pettine does? That whole Rex Ryan type of tree.
Yeah.
They just have creative ways of rushing four. Right? Like creative ways of just getting into just a simple four-man rush so you don't hurt the coverage on the back end. They seemed like they had Minnesota very confused. Then you have guys like Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry winning up front, Darius Smith. They're getting a ton of pressure. through a couple weeks. And as much as we're trashing Kirk Cousins, you know, it was this mix, right? It was like as soon as he had an open receiver, he missed him. As soon as he's, you know, got a clean pocket, nobody's getting open. It is one of those things where if you just look at the offense as a whole, it's like this play, pressure screwed it up. This play, the quarterback screwed it up. This play, nobody got open. It is this combination of everything.
What I really like about Pettine as opposed to Rex Ryan's way of doing it is Ryan would achieve that through actually sending crazy people all over the place. So, like, you could never know which four were coming because it would be a safety from the left. It would be a corner from the right. You never know where the fourth guy was going to be, right?
Right.
But you knew at some point somebody crazy was going to be coming on a blitz. And where that defense started to fall over was when teams started to figure out how to read it. And suddenly now you've got a hot route into the open space and you're wide open. Pettine is able to do it by threatening that without actually sending those guys very often.
He only blitzed 10 out of 35 dropbacks.
Yeah, and he doesn't send those defensive backs very often. Now, he does send them, but it's very few and far between. Just enough to keep you guessing and enough to make you think it's happening all the time, but not enough for it to actually expose the back end of his D.
So he only blitzed on those 10 out of 35, and when he did not blitz, Kirk Cousins had a passer rating of 35.1 to back up
your point.
So Adrian, credit the Packers.
Adrian Amos was the only non-standard pass rusher to rush more than once.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone else was a standard pass rusher, but there were enough threats to make the Vikings offensive line just pee itself and collapse in a little puddle.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, pretty much.
Aaron Rodgers had a nice bounce back game, but we're still seeing him hold the ball a tick too long. And they almost blew the game because he got conservative. They scored 14 right off the bat, but he got conservative at the end and, you know, took some sacks and just, you know, there was
a couple of weird things in this, right? One, even when he was getting the things done earlier, his ball location still sucked. It didn't matter because everyone was wide open.
The touchdown was nice. He threw that up and away from coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And he had another nice pass late in the game up and away.
Right. There was a lot of routine passes that were just in bad places, right?
Yes.
Guys having to reach back here.
Like, that was the Bears game on Thursday night.
Right. So this has been happening for a while. It didn't matter in this game because the coverage was so bad early in the game that the adjustments still worked, right? This is the Josh Allen theory.
Right.
Where if you get guys to get that wide open, doesn't matter how off the target it is because he can adjust and still catch it before
anybody
gets to him. Completion's
more important than the ball location.
But I didn't understand why they stopped scoring because the Vikings, they have nobody that can cover on the back end. Like, they have a base. They're in a weird situation where in a league that's trending ever more to nickel and dime, their base defense is really strong, but their depth is so bad that when they had to go to nickel and dime, you could manufacture a terrible matchup for that defense immediately by just putting somebody in the slot.
Right.
Almost anybody. Like, they are down. They're down Mackenzie Alexander, so they're playing guys like Jayron Kearse in the slot. And, like, Jayron Kearse he's like a safety. He's got no business playing the slot against short, shifty receivers.
You cover tight ends a little bit. But
right.
Yeah.
But when you move Davante Adams into the slot and say, have fun, Jayron, like, that's terrible.
Yeah, not good.
The Packers did that right at the start. They got horrible matchups by the Vikings. Now, Kearse, by the way, actually played reasonably well in this game. But my point is, it's just like that's a horrible matchup that should be relentlessly exploited until they come up with a way of stopping it. The Packers manufactured that horrible matchup a couple of times, scored a ton of points, and then for some reason were unable to keep doing it for the rest of the game. Why?
I don't know.
Why did they stop? I mean, literally, they either had a third linebacker, which in today's NFL is just curtains for coverage, or Kearse playing the slot, who's like a 6'4", 215-pound safety/defensive back hybrid.
Maybe Matt LaFleur gets a lot of credit as a play caller, and a lot of times as a play caller, we use these black and white terms. Do you use play action? Do you use motion? Do you use this, this, and this? Maybe he's not a great adjuster, in-game adjuster.
Maybe.
I mean, if we talk about the best play callers, Andy Reid adjusts, right? Josh McDaniels. I mean, you hear all these behind Sean Payton. All these guys know how to adjust. Plus, you have the quarterback to execute it. Rodgers is still, by the way, leaving open throws over the middle of the field, and, you know, inviting too much pressure. But maybe LaFleur is not able to adjust as well.
Well, the thing
the Packers have scored 31 points in two games, and they're 2-0.
But the weird thing is, he actually had to. Somebody had to adjust away from this because they they were on the thing that they needed to be earlier in the game, then way away from.
Yeah, I don't know.
When people last week, one last thing in this game before we run away to something else, when people last week were like, what an amazing job Xavier Rhodes did against Julio Jones, shut him down, and you're like, well, he did. He played well. But if you look at the tape, there's a lot of plays that, you know, either he had help or he was kind of open and they just never had a shot to go there. This week, largely went against Davante Adams. Six targets to Davante in Rhodes' coverage, six catches, 85 yards, and then one for one for Geronimo. So overall, Xavier Rhodes gave up seven catches for 93 yards, which is every pass that went his way. So we're still, I think the jury is still out on whether Rhodes has problems or not this season.
It's funny because we think that the Vikings defense is kind of regressing a little bit, even though it hasn't necessarily shown up on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
Through 2 weeks. And that's scary if it's going to put that much more pressure on the passing offense at some point down the line.
I mean, I think their depth is a major question mark at this point.
Yeah.
Their starting 11 is really good. And even then, it's kind of tilted towards a base defense.
We've
and if
been
you spread them
creeping
out.
Creeping toward that for a couple
right.
years now.
If you spread them out and force them into sub packages, now you've got some real issues that they haven't fixed.
Something to keep an eye on. Where do you want to go next? Are we going to go rapid fire at any point, or are we just going to be here for 5 hours?
Well, let's try and speed some. Let's go to a game that where we right. really there isn't much to say.
Patriots 43, Dolphins 0.
There you go. This
the
is,
Dolphins are sad.
They really are. They
this threw two pick sixes.
So upsetting. Like, it was just miserable.
The Dolphins offense just doesn't have a shot right now.
Yeah.
I still think defensively they've got enough players to be reasonable.
Some of the passes that Fitzpatrick is attempting is just like, I understand you're in kind of a no-win situation, which is like we're way behind. Like, we're just trying to do something. But come on, like, what are you doing? Like, get the picky through to Gilmore.
That was bad.
Like, what?
Then Rosen came in and did classic Rosen stuff. He drops two dimes in there. One fell incomplete. Well, both fell incomplete. One was dropped. I mean, it is bad. When they throw a good pass, dropped.
Yeah.
When they throw a bad pass, pick six. I mean, it's a disaster. But Rosen did some good, some bad. It's probably time to just see him. The thing about tanking, though, is like it doesn't matter how bad you lose. A loss is a loss. All you need is the loss.
I mean, Rosen is in a complete no-win situation. The best he can do is look slightly better than Fitzpatrick, which is disastrous.
I don't like the way he makes pressure look worse.
I mean, I don't either. But
there's some questions.
But everything is so bad with this offense. There's no way of looking good, right? You could put almost anybody back there, and there's no way he's coming out of this looking good.
Yeah.
So the best thing Rosen can do for his own career is not play. Sit there, get out, find a way of not being in Miami next year, and hopefully your NFL career is still salvageable. Nothing you do this year can do you any good whatsoever.
So the Patriots have outscored opponents 76-3 through two games.
Minka played well, having been
run
on the,
defense,
being good on the being on the trade block now.
Yeah.
Get himself in the shop window.
Yeah,
you know, show what you can do.
Be a Patriot in 2 weeks. Miami has to play Dallas next week.
That line is
worse than the Patriots.
George called it. It's like 20. It's 20 plus.
Yeah, because it's in Dallas, right?
Because now they're on the road. This was 18
and a
half.
They've been
at
home twice.
The Patriots almost did. They cover the over themselves in this game.
Oh, I don't even know what it was.
Because the line was like 18 and a half, and that was only because it was in Miami, and sometimes New England struggle in Miami. Now they're going to Dallas, having been waxed. Like, this is Miami are just depressing.
Can only get better from here, Dolphins.
Really? Because it could probably get worse next week.
No, I don't know. Well, maybe with Dallas. It could get worse. How about Dallas against Washington? Dak tore it up again. And, yeah, they continue to look like a Super Bowl contender.
They do. This team is good. So what's interesting is Amari Cooper is not playing particularly well, which is not great timing for him, given that he's one of the people still trying to get a contract out of Dallas. One of the three people in the building that still hasn't been paid.
He had a touchdown yesterday, so people think he had a good game.
But Michael Gallup is playing really well. And Devin Smith is making plays.
I know, that's your boy.
Look, I really like Devin Smith.
I would take all of the first round speed reclamation projects. Philip Dorsett in New England. If John Ross came free and I'm a contender, I would try to make something of him. I'm all about making something of Devin Smith.
But Devin Smith's thing is, he got back-to-back ACLs.
Yep.
Like, he just had an injury disaster to start his career. And now he's back. He actually looks like a useful player. I really liked him coming out of the draft, and back-to-back ACLs for any kind of like skill position guy, particularly receiver, where it's already a rough, bumpy transition to the NFL because of all the stuff that's different and more complex. Like, that's a really rough ask. And, you know, no, I don't think there's any, you couldn't blame a team for moving on after that. But I agree 100% that I think it's great to see another team take a shot. And like, he made a couple of big plays in this game, had a, like a 45 yard touchdown, something like that.
Yeah.
He could be a legitimate real weapon in this offense, particularly if the offense continues to play as well as it's been. Like, he's a valuable member of a receiving corps now.
Again, the Dallas play calling. It is like Kellen Moore is a football Twitter guy and is just like, yeah, this is how I would call an offense. Run play action. Dak has run the most play action in the NFL, 43% of his snaps. Do you want to hear his stats on play action?
Sure.
25 for 27.
That's pretty good.
25 for 27.
Yeah.
Four touchdowns. So four touchdowns and two incompletions. 333 yards. That's 12.3 yards per attempt. And a passer rating of 157.6. Now, Jimmy G has a perfect passer rating on play action, but it's like 15 for 19, three touchdowns. You know, he had some big plays. But Dak going 25 for 27 on play action.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Particularly when their play action is not the same as San Francisco's play action, where it's, you know, all that crazy, hard outside zone stuff that schemes tight ends coming back against the grain wide open.
Right.
Like, Dallas is more conventional play action, and yet still evidence that you don't have to like build the entire thing around this outside zone. Like, it's actually better to make the argument that play action just works because, you know, they're not doing all this crazy, I mean, not crazy, but they're not doing all this dramatic outside zone action stuff.
No, and they're not 49ers out. And they're not running Zeke into the line 17 times before they do it. So Dallas is like right now the modern football Twitter loves them offense. I mean, they are checking all the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, they're going to destroy Miami next week, likely.
Yeah.
And then at some point, they got to get challenged.
Yeah.
They'll be challenged again, and we'll see what they're made of.
Also, in the news of receivers that I like doing well, Terry McLaurin is maybe their best receiver already.
This is going to be our weekly. Hey, Washington lost again, but let me tell you about Terry McLaurin.
Well, seriously, he's like their number one receiver already.
I know. He's legit.
Right. And the other thing that's interesting is that Donald Penn is back. Like, he's kind of good.
Amazing when you keep him at left tackle.
Right. And that's kind of huge for them because obviously they still don't have Trent Williams. And in any other situation, that would be catastrophic.
By the way,
they lucked into Donald. Well, they, you know, signed.
You know, I could see New England maybe trying to grab Donald Penn real quick. Isaiah Wynn, we didn't talk about this, but because the Patriots won by a million.
Donald Penn or Trent Williams?
Donald Penn or Trent, either of them. Somebody. Isaiah Wynn went down after 12 snaps. Did you see Marshall Newhouse is playing left tackle with Corey Cunningham playing right tackle?
Marshall's a good Twitter follower, so I don't want to trash him too much, but
he has not graded well through the years.
No, but it wasn't great.
But he was poor yesterday.
Well, so look at that. The play of Donald Penn, I think, should be making the Redskins significantly more amenable to trading Trent Williams.
Yeah.
So like the big thing heading into the season is we're not trading him because like, what's our plan, right? We need him. We're not trading him. We think he'll come around eventually. Now, if you assume that, A, as the weeks go by, the confidence that this will all blow over has to be waning, and B, the fact that Donald Penn does appear to be actually a useful backup solution to that, I would say that now the Washington has to be significantly more open to doing a deal than they were heading into the season.
Are we already at the point where you've got teams that are going to be sellers?
I mean, I'm like, obviously Miami is a fire sale, so anybody wants anything, call them up. The problem is they don't have anything.
You know, does Carolina start looking at the Wednesday pod? What are these 0-2 teams?
But for Washington, I think legitimately, just in the Trent Williams thing, like,
yeah, there's something there.
They didn't want to move him heading into the season. I would say after 2 weeks, they are significantly closer to wanting to move him if an offer comes in. And hey, New England, you just lost your left tackle. That makes a lot of sense.
So Dak's running a ton of play action. They're tearing it up. Baltimore Ravens, second most play action in the NFL, Lamar Jackson. So the two most efficient quarterbacks this year, actually, there's three really efficient quarterbacks this year. Dak, Lamar, Patrick Mahomes, probably sitting atop statistically and output-wise, and they're all just scheming it up and executing. It's that combination. So it's not taking anything away from the quarterback, but when you get that mesh of play caller and Lamar Jackson throwing the ball accurately, dropping dimes when he needs to, he still missed. That's the thing. It's like the Mahomes thing. If you're a Baltimore fan and you're like, man, Lamar, we could have scored 45 again. He's leaving open throws. He missed a couple open throws this week. Now, he hit ones when he needed to, but there were still a couple plays left on the table.
But this is the Lamar that we said. This is like high-end Lamar, right? He's never going to become Tom Brady or Drew Brees when it comes to accuracy. He doesn't need to be, though, because he brings other things that they don't. All he needs to do is to be able to make some of those throws, make the occasional tight window throw and take advantage of the ones that are wide the hell open. Just don't miss those ones because those are the really easy ones.
And even when he did, he still comes back. That Marquise Brown sealed the deal.
I mean.
Unreal.
So you need to be able to take advantage of the wide open ones, and then every now and again you're going to need to hit one of those tight window throws. If you can do that, you don't need to be as accurate as a Drew Brees because you do stuff on the ground with your legs that those guys can't dream of. So somewhere in there is a balance. And this, I think, through 2 weeks is like the highest end of what we expected Lamar was capable of, right?
Yep.
Seeing him make some of those absolute tight window dime passes deep down the field. We're seeing him, by and large, take advantage of all the wide open scheme ones that his rushing threat creates and that offensive system creates. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you're seeing Lamar play as well as any quarterback in the NFL through 2 weeks.
77 yards on designed runs. So they opened that up a little bit. You missed the cough button.
I pressed the cough button. It just didn't do anything.
Came through.
Yeah.
It came through. I heard it.
No, it definitely, yeah. Everybody, I think, heard it.
Good thing we're not live.
But I believe that's a problem with the cough button rather than my implementation of the cough button.
Cough button. Just not connected properly. Lamar's also doing a really good job of figuring out when to scramble. As we were saying when he comes out, he's not a guy that just runs around and makes plays, right? He's not a scrambler, so to speak. Can he? Obviously. So 46 yards on 5 scrambles. He's doing a really nice job of picking his spots. So, yeah, he rushed for over 120, threw for 270.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what people thought Michael Vick was going to be doing right when he got into the NFL.
I mean, so quarterbacks like him are endlessly fascinating because people are all over the place when it comes to projecting him, right? You're going to have people that hate him. You're going to have people that think he's amazing. You're going to have people in the middle. And then the fascinating thing is where do they wind up in the spectrum? This right now is like the peak. This is everyone who loves Lamar is like, told you this is what he was all along. Now, obviously, that's not true. The question, but he's developed into this.
He has
by the looks of it.
He's gotten better.
Right.
Through 2 weeks.
Now, it's still only 2 weeks, but right now,
get better.
Right now, Lamar is playing at the level that everybody who loved him said was going to happen.
Or thought that he was the whole time.
And that's just, that's genuinely fascinating. And then, obviously, other young quarterbacks land elsewhere on that spectrum.
Yes. Yes, they do. Arizona, still a fun watch. Kyler still has some ups and downs. I think ultimately Kyler's going to be okay.
Yeah. This offense is intriguing because they are doing different things to other people in terms of this 10, 11 personnel, splitting people out wide, passing constantly. But they don't, the play designs and the route combinations do not appear to be that sophisticated. Now, I don't know if that's by design, that the simpler we make this, the easier it is to operate.
You're describing Chip Kelly's offense, essentially.
Right. But it's interesting because you look at what's happening. It's like it has a degree of success, but almost everything appears to be the same play or the same route. It's like let's toss it up on a back shoulder isolation throw and hope that our timing, et cetera, is good enough to make that happen. It feels like an offense that is this invested in the passing game and spreading everybody out and running four wide receivers constantly should have a greater degree of interplay between all the routes
and schemed open.
Right. And busting guys wide open because there's that many receivers in patterns constantly. It feels like Kyler Murray should have more open receivers by design than he currently has.
Yeah. And they didn't run the ball at all. So if you're, David Johnson, 7 carries for 14 yards.
Got hurt.
And Chase Edmonds, 1 carry for 2. I mean, they had eight designed runs the entire game, plus a Kyler run. So when that's the case, you do need to replace that with some shorter passes, right, open passes, and that type of thing, and you're just not seeing.
And I don't yet know if that's like if that's deliberate, if that's the way this is supposed to work, or if it's just, you know, at the college level, you don't need to do that because, like, frankly, you just spread out a defense and expect them all to be on the same page in the Big 12 and you're going to win.
Well, that's how Baylor – that was more of a Baylor-ish type of offense in the Big 12, which was spread as wide as possible and run deep.
Right.
And if you hit one out of four deep passes, well, you flip the field.
Right. And in college, you don't even need to run deep. Just by spreading them that far out, they're not going to be on the same page. Somebody's going to be doing something different. Yeah. You just have to find the guy that screwed up. But in the NFL, obviously things are tougher and things are more, defenses are more sophisticated and or on the same page collectively. So you may need to find additional wrinkles that make this easier on yourself.
I think a lot of the questions here, it's like there's a modern twist on the offense, as in like, hey, we're going to chuck it around. Where you're lacking is in the red zone and maybe some of the decision making both weeks where you're kicking too many field goals and you're just not putting the ball in the end zone efficiently. On the opposite end of the spectrum, Philadelphia Eagles and Doug Peterson, even though they lost, you know, so this was great. This was like, as ugly as this game was at times, this game came down to coaches' decision making. And I don't know what our AWS coaches' decision of the week is going to be, but I think it's going to be that 4th-and-3. But Doug Peterson, essentially, in a game where Carson Wentz was horrendous, Wentz did salvage things at the end, but Doug Peterson made a decision on 4th-and-goal, like four, from like what, the 4 or 5, to go for it when I think most coaches kick the field goal. So that was a great decision. They score a touchdown to stay in the game. And then Dan Quinn and the Falcons counter on 4th-and-3, instead of punting the ball away late in the game, they're like, no, we got to go for it. And they have a great call. And this was a fun game as far as watching that sticks defense, man, on both sides. Both teams were playing it, just sitting at the sticks on 3rd-and-10. And I kept thinking, man, that's like, it's kind of intimidating to throw into. But if you just run verts, somebody's not going to carry that well. And that's what started to happen. I thought it was a good little chess match on both teams.
I tweeted during the game that the Eagles have such an advantage every week by just having the knowledge that they're going to be making the right call most of the time
on those
4th-down situations. They have a coach that gets the real-time numbers in his head, gets a heads up, hey, if we hit 4th-down, the numbers say go for it. And knowing that they will make those calls almost all the time, it just gives you such an advantage over and the 2-point things as well. When to go for the 2 points, when the math says go for it, when it doesn't. Knowing that your head coach is going to make the right call almost all the time on those things just is so much of an advantage versus teams that consistently lean to the antiquated ideas and therefore make the wrong call almost the entire time and just put themselves behind the eight ball. Like, it's hard. I mean, I'm sure the forecast guys could actually run numbers on it and figure out what that's worth to a team over the years or over the season. But it's such an obvious advantage. It's absurd that there are teams still bogged down in this quagmire of just doing things the way they've always done it when you can see on primetime TV the difference it makes.
So there was a point. I was creating the narrative in my head. Okay. Doug Peterson has won the game for the Eagles because he made a great decision. Mm-hmm. They scored a touchdown, and it essentially gave them a chance to make a comeback in a game where Carson Wentz was horrendous, right? And then in the traditional sense, a lot of times it's lopsided. One coach makes good decisions and the other one doesn't.
Right.
If that had continued, Dan Quinn, he's got 4th-and-3, he punts it away. Maybe that, you know, the Falcons lose. They went from 25% win chance of winning to 77% after the Julio screen.
This is a game that must be absolutely maddening to gamblers, because the line in this game is like, what, 1.5 or something? And it's like literally one play either way decides this game, whether it's the Falcons converting that with the screen to Julio, which, had you been looking for potential penalties to insert on this, officials, you could probably have pinged Mohamed Sanu for a block in the back.
A little early. In the back. Jake Matthews killed a guy too.
He did. But then you have also you got Nelson Agholor dropping the sideline right after that. That probably should have been a touchdown immediately following it. Like,
he said he lost it in the lights.
That was
his hands were also like this.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I got it, guys.
It's gonna be harder. But this game, like, one play makes this an easy cover versus not even close.
So just back to the chess match real quick. A lot of times, so third and 10, the Eagles would just sit at the sticks, and then they just kept, I thought the boss did a nice job highlighting it. They'd go zero blitz.
Yeah.
They're like, who cares that Julio's back there? And then a great adjustment by the Falcons saying, okay, if you're going to bring the pressure, we're going to run the screen. I don't know if you remember the 2009 Monday Night Football game, Colts and Dolphins. Peyton, this was the game where it's like, if you want to keep the ball out of Peyton's hands, like the Dolphins did it perfectly. I think they had the ball. The Colts had the ball for like 18 minutes. And then in crunch time, Peyton calls an audible at the line of scrimmage against an all-out blitz, throws a screen to Garcon or something like that. He gets the game-winning touchdown. It was just classic at the line of scrimmage. I know what's coming. It's an easy throw itself, but it was the pre-snap stuff that was outstanding by Peyton. That was what this was by the Falcons. Whether it's Matt Ryan or it's, you know, whoever, it looked like they had two calls in the huddle, and they're like, you're going to give us a sticks look, or you know, you're going to play normal coverage, or you're going to give us the all-out blitz, and we're going to adjust if he gives the all-out blitz. It was just great. It was just really good. Really good footballing, man. Some really bad quarterback play.
Another thing that was interesting in this game was it looked like the entire Eagles offensive line was just getting its ass kicked by Falcons defense that was, I don't want to say it was handled by the Vikings in week one, but didn't have nearly the same number of problems. But when you look at the grading so far, it's actually what was happening is Isaac Seumalo was getting owned every single snap, and the rest of them played okay.
Yeah.
Like, by and large, the other four members of that offensive line did fine, and Seumalo was just getting absolutely victimized, whether it was in the run game or the pass game, and consequently it looked like the entire unit was just in pieces, because obviously when the quarterback is moved off his spot by somebody, it's usually multiple guys converging on him because you shift him into somebody else's path.
Right.
Right. If in theory everybody's blocking for him to stand in a nice open space in a circle, right, of blockers, when one guy forces him to move from the center of that circle, they're forcing him into something else. So it looks like when one guy's getting his ass kicked every play, it looks like the entire line is collapsing because the quarterback is forced to move into other people's pressure. But those guys, their block is fine until the first guy screwed up. So it looks. One guy getting his ass kicked makes the entire line look worse than it is the point I'm trying to get at there.
And fans just care about our offensive line. It's binary. They're either doing their job or they're not. And if the O-line itself gives up a pressure on a play, it's like, oh, the O-line was bad.
Right, but it's funny how one guy can immediately make the optics look so much worse.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, I think, Wentz likes to hold the ball and...
Well, yeah, like when he runs around to his left.
He just kept trying to scramble out. I mean, he's taken too many hits. He cannot take that many hits. Josh McCown had to come in and make a few plays.
There was one weird pot. When he got the shot to the ribs?
Yeah.
Went to the sideline in obvious pain. And they then cut to a picture from behind the bench of like Wentz still clutching his ribs in pain, talking something out. Nate Sudfeld, I think, is sat to his right, laughing his balls off about something. It seemed like a weird... your starting quarterback
is on the sideline. You don't know what's happening.
I have no idea what happened.
I'm a snap away from playing.
Because he was injured. Street clothes.
That's right. He's still got the...
Right. He's in street clothes, sat behind Wentz, who's like clutching his ribs in pain, talking something out, laughing his ass off about whatever's going on.
Oh, that's because that's how Sudfeld got hurt. He was extending a play that he never should have extended, made a big throw, and took a hit that he shouldn't... It's his fault. It was Sudfeld's fault that he got hurt. It was Wentz's fault that he got hit and also threw a pick on the play.
And he's just laughing himself silly, being like, I've been there.
Yeah. Now we get old man McCown in there.
He seemed very happy about, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not buying that. That seemed weird.
He'll be healthy by next week.
It was such an odd picture that one guy is in pain, clutching his ribs. The other guy sitting beside him laughing himself silly.
At a macro level, a 4th-and-3 decision by Dan Quinn may have saved the Atlanta Falcons season.
Sure.
They're about to go down to 0-2.
Having said that, that would have only been one game back in this division.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, plus you got, Breeze injury.
Right.
Panthers are a disaster.
Panthers suck. The Bucs don't look great.
Forget it. Sunday night didn't mean anything.
Didn't mean anything.
All right. Seattle Seahawks at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Big Ben.
Hurt.
Another injury.
He just randomly wrecked his elbow. It just snapped.
I don't know if it happened yesterday. Are we looking at UCL stuff, Tommy John? Are we looking at just elbow injury?
They showed a replay where he just threw the ball and then suddenly went clutching his elbow.
We've been on this pod for so long, we've probably got a full diagnosis of Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger
already. Right, we're 4 days later, they're already recovered.
Anything on Twitter?
I haven't checked.
Why don't we find out if we've missed anything?
Okay. You do that while we talk about what happened. Roethlisberger goes down hurt, snaps his elbow randomly in the middle of the game. Pittsburgh obviously just dealt their backup, Josh Dobbs, to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So now in comes Mason Rudolph.
No. Mason Rudolph is the backup. That's why Josh Dobbs got traded.
Whatever. So now you're in a situation, we've gotten demonstrably worse at quarterback because Mason Rudolph is in instead of Ben Roethlisberger. On the other hand, maybe somebody will finally start throwing the ball to James Washington instead of Dante Moncrief because his college teammate is now the guy at quarterback. And it still didn't really happen. And I would ask, why are we still throwing the ball to Dante Moncrief? Because when it hits him in the hands, he drops it and ends up being picked off. Why is he there?
Should have seen him in camp.
You
should have seen him in camp.
I don't care. I want to know why he's on the field and why the ball is not going in the direction of James Washington instead. Dante Moncrief had one target yesterday and it hit him in the hands and ended up being picked off.
Gosh. Yeah, he screwed that up.
Yeah. But James Washington only had like two, I think. Basically, the ball went to Juju or nobody, which is not an ideal
Roethlisberger's
distribution,
hoping
I would have said.
Might need surgery. So it might be, it sounds like it's Tommy John-ish.
Tommy John-ish?
UCL stuff.
Okay.
So the usual diagnosis, if they don't give you Tommy John, they'll say like elbow strain.
Yeah.
Try to rehab it.
Strain and knee strains are not diagnoses. They're just like umbrella terms for something jacked in your knee.
Right. It's not. It might be torn, but it might not be. So we're going to call it a strain or a sprain.
But also, that's not like in the least bit specific. Like there's a whole ton of stuff in your elbow or knee. A sprain is...
That's not good.
It just means it's soft tissue somewhere. It doesn't tell you what it is.
No, it just means the ligaments...
Right, but there's a lot of ligaments torn, in there is my point.
The UCL. Be the UCL.
And also, like, a sprain is a tear. It's just a degree of a tear.
Mm.
That's my point. It's just an entirely non-specific way of saying there's something hurt in your joint.
So this will be interesting for the Steelers. If Roethlisberger misses significant time, you're sitting there at 0-2.
That's not great.
We liked Mason Rudolph coming out. I thought he showed a lot of good stuff yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, overall, he was pretty good. I think Mason Rudolph has a future in this league. If you think Big Ben's going to come back and he's going to be your guy for a few more years, you know, Rudolph, you know, this could help the Steelers build Rudolph up and potentially flip him. Or are the Steelers looking to the future now and saying, all right, Big Ben's hurt. We're going to lose another year of him potentially. Mason Rudolph's the guy going forward. Maybe you could flip Ben to – could you flip Big Ben? I mean, let's look long-term for the Steelers. You're 0-2. Could you flip him at the end of the year to, say, the Bears? So the Bears are at the end of the year. This is a Wednesday podcast here.
God.
The Bears at the end of the year are like, man, we've got this great defense. We just went 8-8, averaging 12 points a game with Trubisky at quarterback.
I don't know why you're hating on Trubisky.
And Big Ben goes to Chicago. Is he the guy? Could you flip him for a couple firsts or something like that and completely rebuild in Pittsburgh?
I do wonder how much they would ask themselves internally how much of a pain in the ass Ben Roethlisberger is. Because there appears to be a growing consensus that he is at least difficult to deal with at times, right? And that's okay because he's your starting quarterback and he's very good. And, you know, you're prepared to put up with a lot of bullshit from your starting quarterback because it's worth it. But at some point, if he's not playing that well, and if everybody of talent outside of him has been shoved out of the building because at some point that became a problem. Like at some stage, you have to ask the question of when does that become more of a pain than we're willing to deal with?
Yeah.
And this would, you know, if Mason Rudolph shows well for the time he's playing, that question, I would say, starts to get asked. But the interesting thing to me is that all the things we said about this offense heading into the year as reasons it would be okay without Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell still hold true without Ben Roethlisberger in terms of the situation is still pretty good.
Yeah.
The offensive line is one of the best in the league and is still intact and have been playing together for a long time. The weaponry, it's still good if they would just, you know, deploy it correctly. Like they're now actually, the snap wise, Washington and Deontay Johnson have overtaken Moncrief. Now they just need to pass them the ball.
Next week it'll
right. It's a process.
Yeah.
So if we've taken step one, which is making them play more than Moncrief. If we could take step two and actually pass them the ball sometimes, now we might have some viable receivers.
I could see at the end of the year. So as of a few weeks ago, we were saying, look, 28 out of 32 teams probably feel good about their quarterback situation.
I just had to manufacture myself a cough button because apparently my cough button
It was better than the it's not last time you tried it.
Right, but anybody listening is going to have heard me molesting the microphone with my hand.
As of a couple weeks ago, we thought 28 out of 32 teams, hey, they feel good about their quarterback situation.
Yeah.
But at the end of the year, we could be talking about the Panthers. Do they have a decision to make on Cam the same way the Steelers do on Ben? The Titans have a decision to make on Marcus Mariota. The Bucks on Jameis Winston. I think the Bears maybe on Trubisky. I mean, we might see another, this crazy quarterback market. I wonder if Pittsburgh would go into rebuild mode and think about that. Anyway, in this game, Seattle goes to 2-0. Excellent game by Russell Wilson. And that was despite an offensive line that did not block very well. Kind of old school Seattle Seahawks there.
So it was funny. This game, Roethlisberger goes down, Rudolph comes in, plays okay, but that kind of seals the game for the Seahawks, right? They're now extending the lead, they're getting ahead, and then suddenly, crazy turnover, Devin Bush scoops it up, returns it.
Yes, that
almost
changed the game.
Fumbled into the end zone, turned the whole thing over, ends up getting a touchdown, puts this game right back into play. We were in the office, and our setup here is we've got these three TVs. We get red zone in the middle. We get two games either side. We get some more screens, laptop showing as many games as we can. But this was the game that was on one of the TVs, right? And we don't change the channel on that TV because the remote control is wrecked, right? So whatever's on that TV stays on that TV.
We need to upgrade that.
Until we get to the 4 p.m.s and we have to change the channel. But we got to 4 minutes left. The game's basically out of hand. We're like, all right, it's probably time to change the channel on that one. Literally, as we get up to walk around the back of the TV where the box is, the scoop and score thing happens, or scoop and almost score happens. Let's give it a few more minutes.
And your boy Rashad Penny had a nice big run.
He did. Excuse me. He did, although...
That was it.
Yeah.
37 yards.
Yeah, the one really nice run. The rest of the time, I really didn't think he looked good. He was never the most svelte of running backs in the world, but he kind of looks like he's carrying some additional timber these days.
The Eddie Lacy.
Yeah. He didn't look good outside of that one big play. And even that was a kind of, all right, I bounced to the right to escape this, and oh, look, there's wide open ground to run into. Now, he showed good speed once he got into it, but, it was basically one cut and open real estate.
So I still think Seattle, ultimately, their coverage could do them in. But they're sitting there at 2-0 with Wilson's playing really well, and that's going to offset a lot of things.
They're in a great spot where they are going to – we talk about them constantly as when you have Russell Wilson, you're basically sitting at 8 wins, and then how everything else around them determines how far either side of that you're going to move.
Yep.
They are now in a spot where they just played the Steelers, who lost Big Ben for a half the game. They're about to play the Saints, who are going to be without Drew Brees for the entire game. They're going to run into a couple of the toughest teams in their schedule, minus their quarterback. And they could wind up stealing a couple of wins out of their schedule based off the fact that the quarterback they were supposed to play didn't show up or last the whole game. That's a huge win for that team.
Something to keep an eye on there. Rapid fire everything else.
Oh, okay.
Chargers at Lions. Every time I looked up, the Chargers had touchdowns taken off the scoreboard. Lions played some tough D, though. They did a nice job. Stafford had a classic up and down Stafford game.
Made some really nice throws.
Made some bad ones.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Phillip Rivers' bad interception.
Yes.
To finish it. They're driving to, for the go-ahead score. And he just underthrows Keenan Allen into double coverage.
That's not ideal.
No.
Not ideal at all.
So those pesky Lions, man. Sticking around now at 1-0-1.
Yeah, which is going to be interesting in that division. Because
undefeated Lions.
It still remains wide open. 49ers stomped the living bejesus out of the Bengals.
That was
hometown
more the
Bengals.
Yeah, that was more the Bengals than I expected. They played
right.
Above their skis in week one.
This is one of those perfect week two adjustments. Don't get carried away by week one. The Bengals do, in fact, still suck.
And the 49ers offense, just when you look up and down, you're going to see really good grades all the way across the board. Garoppolo as well. But it's just everybody. Kittle, it's a bunch of old linemen, it's fullbacks and running backs. You're just going to see pretty good grades across the board because that's what a good Kyle Shanahan offense does. So that was what we expected. As I mentioned earlier, Jimmy G now has a perfect passer rating when using play action. That is the Shanahan.
John Ross with another 100-yard game. Tyler Eifert, I haven't checked the injury report this morning, but he made at least one catch without breaking something. So yeah, that's a bonus.
So do the Bengals become sellers?
I don't know.
I mean, with guys like John, I mean, John Ross, they should probably want him as part of their rebuild. It's different when he's emerging in year three, but like an Eifert or something like that might be.
Needless to say, given the scoreline, but this defense went right back in the tank, having like played well in week one, and I was saying, yeah, just getting everyone back on the same page again should help. They just got eviscerated by the 49ers.
Yeah, this was like old Bengals where it's their linebackers, Preston Brown, Nick Vigil, guys who last year looked a little overwhelmed.
Right.
Looked overwhelmed.
Again.
Yeah.
I mean, this offensive scheme, again, will do that to teams. It's designed specifically to stress defenses, et cetera, open up space, scheme guys wide open. The flip side of that is it means that the defense is inherently put in an ugly spot basically every single play. And when you're already just about trying to tread water to keep yourself not looking like an idiot, this is the kind of defense that will make you look like an idiot pretty quickly.
Yeah. Credit Bobby Slowick for all that.
All Bobby. Good work, Bobby.
The Tennessee Titans, speaking of regressing, you know, we said, look, they've been 9-7 the last couple of years. We've seen games like what we saw in week one where they handed it to the Browns, made life difficult for the offense. Yeah, they only gave up 19 to the Colts yesterday, but the offense just can't get out of their own way to score enough points.
Yeah.
In another game, it's just this inconsistency. Maddening, man.
Maddening. Marcus Mariota would be one of the most maddening quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah. And he's still showing well statistically this season. But it's just like if you're just looking at passer rating, but it's like soft. 5.5 yards per attempt yesterday. Week one inflated by a 75-yard touchdown. I don't know if there's a next step for Mariota.
Right. I think he's going to be one of those quarterbacks that's just, he is that and is never going to go either way. This game also had one of the best stories out of the weekend, which was David Questenberry scoring a touchdown.
It's fantastic.
For anyone that doesn't know, he was a guy drafted by the Texans, right, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Had cancer of some kind. I don't remember exactly what it was. Leukemia, maybe, I want to say. Anyway, had some form of cancer. Never played for the Texans, or maybe got back right at the end, but missed significant time recovering, obviously, from cancer. Gets back, now signed by the Titans. Plays one snap as an extra offensive lineman, scores a touchdown. Fat guy touchdown. Immediately, great. Fat guy coming back from cancer, amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Also, we've identified where the kicker cliff is. So for everybody waiting for Tom Brady to hit the quarterback cliff at 42, turns out the kicker cliff is 46 years old, for anybody keeping track.
Yeah.
Vinatieri has forgotten how to kick at the age of 46. I was thinking about this. So people are talking, this may already have happened by the time people are listening to this, unless you're listening live. The Vinatieri is expected by many to announce his retirement today. Basically just walk away.
Oh, like today?
Today, Monday. And because he's missed like three extra points in the first 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
Like legitimately just forgotten how to kick overnight. That would seem like an unlikely thing to happen to somebody. Like if you've been kicking well in the NFL for like 25 years, you don't just forget how to do it. Like you're in a weird spot, right?
I wonder if it's something training wise.
Whatever.
But as a former professional athlete, you just, as you get older, you lose the will to train at the same level year over year.
Right.
Now for me, that happened maybe at 29 when Major League Baseball became really far away. Maybe for Vinatieri, he's just like, man, let me just eat donuts instead here. I'm 45. I'm not going to forget how to kick.
Well, this is my
point. Was he drafted in 96?
95.
95.
So where I was just trying to check out before you ended what you were saying.
You want me
just
to keep going?
Yeah, quickly keep going.
Vinatieri ate too many donuts this offseason, apparently.
All right, got it. So Vinatieri, you know how old Vinatieri is? When he had his rookie start, his first start in the NFL, you know where Randy Moss was?
In 95?
Florida State.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He is so old. He's still playing in the NFL, and his first NFL start happened. Randy Moss was in Florida State.
Hadn't even transferred
to
Marshall.
For anyone that doesn't even know, like, that's not where he went to college for the majority of his career because he had to transfer out. Randy Moss is known for dominating at Marshall, then getting into the NFL, then dominating the NFL, then going to the Hall of Fame, having sat out for 5 years. Vinatieri started like before any of that happened, and he's still playing.
Where were you in 1995 when he was drafted?
Like at school.
We were in seventh grade, right?
Whatever. I was in.
Did you guys go to grades at the same time?
No, no, it's slightly different. Like the early end of high school in England, in the north of England.
And I was in seventh grade.
That's how old Vinatieri is. But my point is, right, you don't forget how to kick overnight. Like you didn't just lose everything you've been doing muscle memory wise for the last million years. And the other thing that's kind of weird is that like Vinatieri is known for anything. It's being clutch, right? He's half the reason the Patriots won a bunch of those rings. He's had a whole second career in Indianapolis. Like if there's one thing that he's been exceptional at over his career, it's clutch, which would indicate to me a degree of mental toughness. Would that mental toughness that makes you unfailing self-belief that I'm about to nail this kick and win the Super Bowl, even though all of the pressure in the world is upon my shoulders right at this very moment, would that same thing not make you think, I'm not walking away from this. I'm going to fix whatever it is that's gone janky in the first 2 weeks and start kicking properly again. Why would that guy go, you know what, I'm done. I'm retiring. Does that not seem weird?
I don't know. I haven't put much thought into 46-year-old kickers.
Well, I'm not privy to what goes on in the mind of a professional 46-year-old athlete. You're probably closer than me.
Closer, yeah. I'll let you know in 8 years.
Right, being both older and a former professional athlete of some kind.
I'm about ready to make the comeback.
But that's a weird juxtaposition to me. A guy who has the mental toughness to make all those kicks.
No, I think you just know.
When
it
first starts to go wrong, go, you know what, I'm out of here.
Here's relatable. I went up to dunk the other day. You saw it.
I did.
I got a bad knee. That's the knee I'm jumping off of.
Ugly.
My whole body felt like I normally feel when I dunk. I can dunk easily. My body didn't respond the same way. I didn't get over the rim.
No, it's amazing.
What we like to call playing above the rim.
Yes.
I did not do that.
I was
playing beside the rim.
Watching you attempt the dunk now is actually an amazing case study in physics. Like, so
what do you mean?
Well, there's three people from PFF that play basketball right now that can dunk, right? You, because you start basically where the rim is. Eric.
And I'm an incredible
athlete. Who broke it out this week. Eric's, what, 6'4"? Yeah. Former D2 blocking tight end. Broke out a dunk this week. First time he's done it in like 3 years, he says.
Rattled at home. He got that, yeah.
Right. Now he got a few that were clean. And then Renner, who's the most sort of, well, he's the youngest and therefore the most like.
He's got some explosiveness.
The most current athlete amongst the group.
He's like
right?
a 4'8 guy with some explosiveness.
Right. So those three people. Now, when you watch Renner dunk, there's this sequence that you'll know from watching dunk videos or anything, right? People, they take these couple of elongated steps. They kind of crouch down to be able to spring up, right? So the last step before the rim is this down, then up spring thing, right? You take exactly the same footsteps, only you don't go up. You just go forwards. There's zero vertical. Like,
I'll work.
There's no up.
Well, I've been looking for things to motivate me.
Now you're in a great spot because you don't need to go up because you're already like 9 foot tall.
Well, apparently I do because I missed one. I missed a dunk in the game because my leg just, my vertical has disappeared.
But I'm just saying, if Renner had the same vertical as you, he'd be like 3 feet under the rim.
But I mean, you've lost your speed.
Yes.
I don't know how can you not relate to Vinatieri? Your body, your brain says, I can do this. Your body does not.
But at
you
no
realize
point,
it and you walk away.
But no, but the body, that's he's not missing them because he doesn't have the leg to make it 25 yards. Like he's shanking them to the right.
Yeah, accuracy.
Like that's a technique issue. That's not my leg has failed.
Spent too much time. We're 3 hours into the podcast.
But the other thing is that at no point did I ever have the unfailing self-confidence of I am the fastest human being on the planet. Therefore, no matter what happens and no matter what evidence is placed in front of me, I will burn you. That never happened in my brain, right? It was just like, all right, I'm faster than this loser, but I'm not, you know, if I come up against a really fast guy, I'm screwed.
All right. Buffalo Bills are now 2-0.
They are.
At the New York Giants.
Josh Allen's playing well.
As was the case last year, the Bills coverage is legit.
Yeah.
They have a good defense. out of all, you know, we talked about defense regresses and all that stuff. Sean McDermott has done a fantastic job of building that defense. That's going to keep them in every game. And I think we've seen the two sides of Josh Allen through 2 weeks. Don't say he's playing well. He played well yesterday.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
He's playing well.
Last week, I mean, it was turnover machine, and pulled it out. And then yesterday, much more efficient.
Look,
and good Josh Allen.
I work with the most recent information to hand, and right now, Josh Allen is playing well.
He was good. We're out of time. We can't get into too many details on this.
Okay.
Daniel Jones time for the Giants yet?
Look, it was Daniel Jones time week one. It's still Daniel Jones time. Like, Daniel Jones time is happening until Daniel Jones is no longer at the Giants. So, yes.
Two more.
You know, if Eli loses next week, he'll have a losing record as a starter for his career.
It's amazing.
Isn't it? I'm not a big QB wins guy, but for people that are, that's a real kick in the stones for Eli lovers.
Get you in the ballpark. Get you there. Chicago Bears at the Denver Broncos. didn't look like a great game on paper. Wasn't until like the last couple minutes.
Yeah. Joe Flacco looked horrendous right up until he executed like a game-winning drive. Yeah.
And Trubisky didn't make a throw.
Trubisky then responded.
The final throw.
Responded with his own game-winning drive, of which the best play might have been having someone fall on him.
Yeah, that was a bad call. Bradley Chubb.
But that might have been the thing that he brought most to the game-winning drive was being sat on by Bradley Chubb from behind.
So the Bears survived because, you know, kicker kicked a field goal.
And apparently we found an extra second for them on the clock.
They have, that was weird too. I was trying to explain to Kelly. I'm like, on a normal play in the NFL, guy goes to the ground, and then it's like, if the clock needs to stop, you're like, 2 seconds usually roll off. Right?
Here's the thing.
But when you do replay, it's like, oh, we hit the ground, 1 second.
They keep
rolling it back. Different judge of time.
They keep rolling it back to be like, oh, there's a second still on the clock when he's touched down. But surely the point is, whenever the first guy calls timeout, like it's when somebody
calls timeout, and the ref, there's like, it's kind of like the delay of game doesn't happen as soon as it hits zero.
Right.
The ref has to see it,
react,
so there's an extra second built in.
But that in theory, that one should happen the second. So the delay of game thing, I can see the argument for saying as soon as that clock ticks zero, the thing should be there, right?
Yeah.
In practice, the ref has to look up at the clock, look down to see if it snapped, then blow the whistle, so you get like an extra second, right? But this one, even in theory, it's not, the game is not done. Somebody actually needs to call timeout, right? So the guy needs to go down, be touched. The play is over. The clock is still running. Now there's the time for somebody to actually call timeout and an official to react.
You're saying it takes at least a second for the call of the timeout.
I'm saying the practicality of actually calling somebody on the field, calling a timeout. And by the way, the guy that went down didn't appear to. So somebody other than the one we're looking at called the timeout.
You're assuming, you know, Nagy's right there next to a ref or something.
I'm just
like
assuming that whatever that distance is like a second and is material time that probably would have taken everything off the clock.
So even before you got there, you had the fascinating decision of the Broncos to go for two for the win instead of the tie.
Only to then.
Then they have a delay of game.
Go for two again.
They kick it. Buster Screen goes offside. And then they get the ball. And that was the interesting thing, too. People had to explain that rule. They went from a two-point conversion at the two.
That's what was confusing the crap out of me. And then suddenly they're kicking from the 20.
Well, the previous penalty just gets lost in the ether. It's gone.
Yeah.
So then they got to do the two-point conversion from the one. They get it. They're up 14-13. And the Bears come back and make the win.
Emmanuel Sanders.
Fantastic.
Coming back from an Achilles makes a Santonio Holmes-esque catch in the back of the end zone to tie this thing up. Ends up being the guy catching the two-point thing, right, as well. Makes an incredible play. A Bears kicker makes a play, dropping the bomb at the end to actually win the game for them. This was kind of crazy. But by the way, if you're a Chicago fan,
Emmanuel Sanders could be another one of those guys that gets flipped as well. We're talking 0-2 Denver. Is he one of those guys that you...
I don't think they're in. I mean, they're in win now at all costs mode, if anything.
Denver?
Yeah. They shouldn't be, but if anything, they're going to be buying to try and keep their heads above water.
And they're 0-2, man.
Well, I know this, but I'm just saying, I don't think you're going to get too far in that building suggesting that we should get rid of the things that will help us win games this year.
Interesting.
If you're a Chicago Bears fan, are you coming around to the concept, the self-evident truth, that Mitchell Trubisky is not actually good? Are you still head in the sand going, no, this will come good. He's young.
I've seen both.
Okay.
I've seen people talking about both. He's been poor. through two games, he has not played that much differently than last year.
You know what is different, though? I think the degree to which he is bad is now changing what they are trying to do on offense, which in turn is making it even worse.
Yeah.
So the only good the good thing last year was that Matt Nagy comes over with this Andy Reid style offense, which, as we said earlier, is maybe the best offense in the NFL. And therefore, that's putting everybody in a great situation to succeed. And Trubisky just isn't able to take advantage of that the same way Patrick Mahomes or Carson Wentz is in Philly, or Alex Smith was the last year before he left Kansas City. And consequently, everything's not as good. But the offense is still doing the things that makes that a successful offense. The problem is, so now you're like, okay, Trubisky isn't able to execute that. Things are going badly. We need to scale it back. We need to make things easier for him. We need to limit the number of things the offense is able to do. Maybe that will simplify his reads and he'll play better. Problem is, it's not making him play any better. And you've just taken away the things that were making the offense successful in the first place. So everything got worse. That, I think, is what is happening in Chicago right now. The offense is being scaled back to try and make Trubisky play well. It's not working, and all it's doing is making everything else worse around him.
Yeah,
that's a big problem.
He started off slow last year too, and then had those couple good games that salvaged him statistically. But you know, it's something else for us to study. I think if you're a team that feels like you're really close, you've got this really good. I mean, the Bears they've scored 19 points in two games. They've given up 26.
Yeah,
they're 1-1
still.
Yeah, the D looks really good. This was exactly the position the Jaguars were in 2017, and they essentially lost a season maybe by reinvesting in Bortles. I don't know if they had a perfect other solution other than, you know, you pass on Lamar, you passed on Mahomes. It's just until don't fool yourself until you get the guy.
Right. Speaking of the Jags, it's our final game of the week, Stephen. Well, other than Monday Night Football.
We've made it.
Mustache Money Minshew at quarterback all game long. We had high hopes.
Not good until
had high hopes heading into the game, and you know, things were not good.
Everybody saw that picture.
Yeah.
That was from last year.
Yeah, right. I didn't think that was...
Had nothing to do with him landing turned. In Houston for the game or right. anything like that, and everybody made it seem like he did. That was it.
Yeah. So he didn't play well right up until the final drive of the game where he's driving, gets him in, and now you go for two. It's like, we are going to get this done. We're going to win this game. We're going for the win. Minshew's hot right now. It's on. Leonard Fournette up the gut. Stuffed.
Oh, gosh.
What is that call? Bad. What are you doing? The funny thing is, has Leonard Fournette ever broken a tackle in his life in the NFL?
No. 15 carries, zero yesterday.
The best thing he seems to do is to fall forward over people for a while. Like, even when they get him in space. Like, so you get him in a spot where you're like, Dalvin Cook is skinning this guy alive right now. And Leonard Fournette puts the move on him. Guy still hangs on to his ankles and he just falls forward for 2 yards.
Sorry, he forced three in week one.
Whatever. Didn't see him. Didn't happen. I'm just saying, at this point, Leonard Fournette up the gut when you've got a quarterback finally catching fire in this drive is a horrible decision.
The last 3 years, Leonard Fournette has averaged 2.4 yards after contact per rush.
Yeah.
Each of those three
Which
years.
Is about the distance that he falls forward when a guy
That's
is tackling.
That's pretty much it. Long run of 14 yards so far this year. So yeah, hasn't been good. O-line did not grade well for us.
O-line was bad.
Defense played much better than they did in week one. Deshaun Watson was very inconsistent. Another story for him as well, too. You know, coming off that Saints game where he made those huge throws down the stretch, he just, you know, he's still just like leaving a few too many on the table. And we charged him with two of the two sacks on him.
Yeah, so. This was like this game for the Texans, I think, kind of highlighted their deficiencies, which is when they go up against a really good defense, they're going to have major problems because their offensive line still sucks. And as much as they're able to overcome that a lot of the time, because Deshaun Watson is really good and DeAndre Hopkins is really good, and occasionally they can string it together for long enough that it doesn't matter that the offensive line is garbage.
Yeah.
Eventually, that magic just can't happen that consistently, and things will there'll be a struggle.
And all that said, not great grades in the secondary again for Houston, even though they only gave up the 12 points. The deficiencies on both sides, you know, in those two areas are going to be questions for them.
So people last week complained that we didn't touch Monday Night Football. Do you want to quickly preview it? And by quickly, I mean really stupidly quickly.
People touched on it?
Yeah.
But we previewed it on the Thursday pod.
I know, but people don't pay attention to that.
All right, so
plus,
you haven't...
our pods now are like 9 hours long. They might not have made it that far.
Yeah, true. All right, so here we go. Jets and Browns, if you haven't seen it yet.
The Sam Darnold-less mono-afflicted Jets.
Yeah.
Against Baker and the Browns.
No way anybody's going to get to this before Monday Night Football.
They might.
With the length of this podcast.
Well, I'm just saying.
I think the Browns bounce back.
Yes.
Pretty strong here.
They have to, right? There's no way that a Trevor Siemian-led Jets offense does anything.
No, I mean, it's the same thing we said, you know, if you want to over-exaggerate and say, well, look at those Tennessee Titans.
Right, this is the classic. Week two is the revert back to where you thought it was. Let's revert back to where we thought we were, which is the Browns are better than the Jets. The end. They were better even with Sam Darnold, and now Sam Darnold's out.
The Browns should crush them.
Yes.
That's what I think happens.
Good. Done. They're covered. See? Happy?
That's our preview?
Yeah. I told you it was going to be quick.
So there you go. It's our quick runaround. Week two.
Quick runaround.
We're getting... Look, the people want more content. We're giving it to them. We're having fun. Just talking football. Let us know what you guys want us to talk about more in depth on Wednesday. If we touched on something in this podcast and you're like, hey, man, give me some numbers behind that. Give me a deeper dive. We'll do a little bit more of a PFF deeper dive. Hit on some of the bigger issues on the Wednesday podcast, and we'll be back on Thursday for the week three preview.
Mm-hmm.
Sound good?
Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. See you guys Wednesday.
Bye-bye.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.